The last time I spoke to you, I mentioned the fact at the end of my talk that if you didn't believe in UFOs, all you had to do was go back and read about the UFOs that were over Washington, D.C. in the early 1950s. I'd like to pick up where I left off, if you don't mind. Many people, as a matter of fact, probably most people, don't remember these incidents because they weren't born yet. But in 1952, there was a UFO incident known as the Washington Flap or the Washington National Airport sightings. What happened was Edward Nugent, an air traffic controller at Washington National Airport, spotted seven objects on his radar. They're about 15 miles away from the city, and there was supposedly no known aircraft in the area. Not only that, these objects were not following any of the established flight paths, so of course Nugent had to tell his superior. His superior, a man named Harry Barnes, a senior traffic controller, went with Nugent and they watched for a while as these objects came closer. They noticed that they didn't move like any normal aircraft would. I think one of the things we have to remember is that in 1952, aircraft, even jet aircraft, were a lot slower than they are now. And these aircraft were going at amazing speeds in those days. Now what happened was Barnes called the National Airport's other radar center. He wanted to check out his radar to make sure it was working right. And they said they also saw the same thing. When they looked out of the window of the control tower, they saw a bright orange light. As they were watching, objects began to appear. These objects moved over the White House. They were also over the United States Capitol. At this point, Barnes called Andrews Air Force Base. Jets were scrambled. They said, check out what's over the White House. It appears like nothing we've ever seen before. These planes would get near the White House, but before they could reach it, the UFOs would scamper off. The UFOs caused no damage whatsoever. When the fighter planes returned to base, the UFOs came back and went over the White House. This game of cat and mouse continued a few times that day. These events continued for 2 days, July 19th and July 20th of 1952. The major newspapers of this country picked up the story, which would be unheard of today. And this story appeared on the front page of many newspapers. UFOs were seen again on July 26th and July 27th. Each time the UFOs would appear, fighter planes would be sent for. But it was all in vain, as the UFOs would again make a quick exit. The White House was very concerned about what was going on, and the president at the time was Harry Truman, who issued an order to shoot down the UFOs. When the Air Force decided to explain what was going on to the public, General Roger Ramey was involved. You may remember him from Roswell. Exactly what influence he had on what General Stamford had to say, we will never know. But Stamford claimed that was what was over the White House and what had fled and come back several times was nothing more than meteors. This was a complete insult to the intelligence of every U.S. citizen. Moving on, another unexplainable event occurred in 1967 at a U.S. Air Force Strategic Air Command Missile Combat Base. The base was called the Maelstrom Air Force Base. It contained missiles that were in underground silos. What had happened was that a guard who had been on the ground called in to one of the silos and stated that he had seen a UFO. Not knowing what to do, the officer he spoke to said, "Keep your eye on it." Right after that, strange things began to happen. Missiles started turning themselves off. At first, the personnel thought there was something wrong with the equipment, but everything tested fine. The missiles were all part of Echo Flight. The base was located in central Montana. As the missiles went off, the officer called back to the guard on top and said, "Where is the UFO located?" And he said, "It is right overhead." There was no doubt at this point that somehow this UFO had the ability not only to shut down our missiles, but probably to do a lot more damage if it wanted to. So why was a UFO demonstrating to us that it could shut down nuclear-tipped missiles in the first place? The answer to that seems clear to me. They were showing us two things. First, that it is wrong to shoot nuclear missiles at each other. And second, that they have the power to shut down everything and maybe even destroy it if they want to and if we get out of hand. Nothing could have scared the Air Force more than what happened. As the missiles were going down, the officer realized there was a maintenance crew on the base. So they contacted them to ask them what maintenance they were performing, thinking that maybe the maintenance crew was really responsible for the problems of the missiles going offline. The reply was they hadn't started to do anything yet. As the panicked officer watched, within seconds, the entire Echo flight, which was composed of 10 ICBM missiles, was down. It turned out that something had altered the guidance and control units of the missiles, but they were still at full power. About 10 miles away was another flight of missiles called Oscar Flight. They had also spotted a UFO over their area. Within a few minutes, 8 of their missiles had gone down from ready. As they watched, they could see UFOs streaking across the skies. One UFO had come so close to the ground that one of the personnel had approached it. When I interviewed the military personnel, he said the UFO was right outside of the front gate, and it was saucer-shaped, and it had been hovering silently. A second UFO had also been seen. Civilians had also seen UFOs that night. As the evidence increases, you can see what I'm talking about when I say that UFOs are real. At least the evidence seems to be overwhelming. And if you haven't come to that conclusion yet, I have a few more cases to discuss with you. Another UFO event took place on October 4th, 1967, in the province of Nova Scotia in Canada. As a man watched, a UFO crashed into the water. It seemed to have a smoke trail as it went in. A second UFO followed it as if to try and help it. The man called the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and the Canadian Coast Guard also came. At first it was thought an airplane had crashed and the man had misidentified it, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police conducted a search to see if anything had crashed into the water. The government of Canada declared there was no known lost aircraft, and they could find nothing which could have crashed into that water. At that point, they actually wrote down on a document that an unidentified flying object was involved in this mystery. Several witnesses were interviewed, including a diver from the Royal Canadian Police. They claimed they actually saw an alien spacecraft. Several units of the United States Armed Forces were dispatched, including ships, to investigate. At times, the United States was able to track these objects. When they sent divers down, one of the divers came back. He was clearly in a state of shock. He had seen something, and many witnesses say he had been burned. What he claimed he saw was an alien outside of his ship working on it with a second ship in the area. It seemed that the UFOs were able to move underwater, even though one of them was damaged. The ships were not able to catch them. I don't know if a submarine was ever dispatched to this area, but it could have been. But even if it was not able to do anything about the UFOs, recover them or otherwise. No debris was ever found, and no bodies. By the next day, the Canadian government had determined that no aircraft was missing, and this did not involve aircraft whatsoever, even though they had put down an unidentified flying object on a report. That phrase really referred to an unidentified plane they thought had crashed into the water. The military conducted a search near Shelbourne. As the ships plied through the water for a couple of days, suddenly a UFO came out of the water and flew into the sky, accompanied by a second one. It seemed that somehow the damaged UFO had been repaired. I called it a UFO for the sake of clarity. Others might have called it a USO, as I had stated previously, but I didn't want to confuse the issue. I wanted to be sure that everybody knew I was talking about the same two unidentified flying objects. A fisherman had reported a strange foam that appeared on the water. I don't believe any conclusion was ever reached on what this foam was, but some think that it may have had something to do with a propellant that was used by the UFOs. One of the divers claimed that the object was not from this earth and that pictures were taken of it, although none of us have ever seen them. One of the funny things is that when the two UFOs came out of the water, it was on October 11th of that year. They had come out of the water after the search for them ended. None of the documents that were prepared by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police seem to be available today. But the event is mentioned in other Canadian government documents. Some people say that the case that I am about to talk about next is the case in UFO history. In other words, it's the Rosetta Stone. It can't be denied because of who the witnesses were. This case occurred in Rendlesham Forest. As a matter of fact, it is called the Rendlesham Forest Incident. Rendlesham Forest is in Suffolk, England. In December of 1980, just outside a Royal Air Force base known as Woodbridge, that was used by the U.S. Air Force at the time, a strange event took place. The event lasted for 2 to 3 days. A soldier went back onto the base and announced that he saw a UFO and that it was lighting up part of the forest. While the times are not clear, it is thought that the first sighting of the UFO was on the 24th of December, but it was almost the 25th by that time. The last time the UFO was seen was just about the 27th of December, so maybe you could call it 4 days, but barely. Around 3 a.m. on December 26th of 1980, strange lights were reported by a security patrol near the east gate of the Air Force Base, apparently descending into the nearby Rendlesham Forest. In the beginning, the military men thought it was a plane somehow going into the forest. They saw strange lights that seemed to be moving between the trees. And then there was a bright light coming from some object. At a later date, Sergeant Jim Peniston, who had seen the object, claimed the craft was of an unknown origin. And he made detailed notes of its features. He even touched its warm skin. He copied numerous symbols that were on the body of the craft. At the time, the UFO then flew away. The craft was described as having a triangular landing gear, which left three impressions on the ground that were visible even the next day. Peniston was regressed by hypnosis, and he claimed that the craft he had seen had come from the future and was occupied by time travelers, not extraterrestrials. On December 28th, the servicemen returned to the woods. This time, they had radiation detectors with them. They also had the deputy base commander, Lieutenant Colonel Charles Halt, and they all investigated the sightings. They recorded the events on a micro cassette recorder. During the investigation, a flashing light was seen across the field to the east. It was almost in line with a farmhouse. Later, star-like lights were seen in the sky to the north and south, the brightest of which seemed to beam down a stream of light from time to time. Nobody ever claimed that the U.S. Air Force made a video. Some think it had, and that the tape was never made public. Newspapers did pick up on this story, and it appeared first in News of the World on October 2nd, 1983, beneath a headline that said, UFO lands in Suffolk. And that's official. Halt wrote a memo to the Ministry of Defense about what his men had seen and what he had found. He never received a reply. When some of the people that were involved in the original sighting were no longer in the military, they went back to the site with UFO investigators, and nothing was found for many years. Then one of them realized they had gone in the wrong direction. That was not where the true site was. Originally, when the soldiers went back to the site with radiation detectors, they did see a radiation reading higher than normal. Many people have said that the readings that they got were in dispute. There is no doubt that something did appear in the Rendlesham Forest woods. It was not very big and was able to dodge between trees while it was only a few feet off the ground. Many of the military men saw it. What was this device? I don't know. But the men that were involved with it certainly believed it was alien, and that if it was an alien, it was from the future. Much as what people believe today about UFOs. I'd like to talk to you about another UFO crash that took place in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, on December 9th, 1965. The object that hit the ground has been described as something that looked like a large acorn, which had strange writing all around its base. When this did hit the ground, it wasn't long before the military descended on the area with a flatbed truck, took the object, threw a tarp over it, and left, leaving no signs that anything had ever hit the ground. You may wonder why I think that this is so significant. In order to explain to you why I have to go back to a time before World War II. The Germans had been experimenting with a strange object known as the bell. The laboratory was in Poland. Some scientists had died while experimenting with it because of strange radiation that it put out. No one today is clear on what the bell actually did. Well, they don't admit it anyway. Some think that the bell was some sort of time travel machine. What makes everything so mysterious is the fact that the object that crashed in Kecksburg looks like the old German bell. Could it be that we absconded with the original German bell and developed it to a point where we were trying it out, and that's why it crashed? Some say they don't think that it's possible, and the reason they state is the strange writing around the base. Could it be that this writing is disinformation and was only put there in case the object crashed and was seen by witnesses? You never know. The government is pretty tricky when it comes to things like that. Aside from these incidents, are all the sightings that are being made lately of triangular objects that pass through the sky silently, are of great size, and are witnessed by many people? What are these triangular objects, and where do they come from? Some say that these objects are nothing more than a secret type of blimp that is being developed by the military. That might be easy to believe, except for the fact that some of the witnesses who have seen these slow-moving triangular objects have also seen them speed up to a point where they shot out into space and disappeared in just seconds. I don't think that any blimp is capable of moving at these speeds. I have tried to show that there is something going on and that UFOs really do exist. There are a lot of people out there who would scoff and laugh at this idea. The only thing is, I would hope that they would reconsider when they heard the evidence that I presented, and at least think that there is a chance that UFOs may be extraterrestrial. It really isn't such a crazy idea, as I said before, when you consider how many planets there are out in space. It is almost a crazy idea to think that we are alone. Matter of fact, that is probably crazier than believing that there are others of intelligence. The real question is, why are they interested in us? There might be several reasons. One, they may have come from here and evolved past us when they moved somewhere else. They may have come from Mars, and some of them came here and some of them went to other planets. You never know. On the other hand, they might have come from different star systems. It could be that some of these extraterrestrials are somehow related to us. Others might come here because we look so different to them and would like to study us. I think that human beings could understand this, since we love to study different types of animals and such. And to aliens, who are far superior to us, they might want to study us to learn their own history. Then there are the people who say that we were created by aliens and we were a slave race who revolted. I find that very hard to believe. If you have a slave race that revolts and their masters are so technologically advanced that they can fly from one planet to another, it stands to reason their weapons would be so devastating that they could destroy us anytime they wanted to. why would they let us actually win a revolt? I have to throw this one out, the bathwater. Now, I think that UFOs are composed of aliens who are curious about us for whatever reasons, and they have either made contact with our governments or they are planning someday to make contact with us.